Mastermind Agent is proud to present Success Calls. Top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.
Hi, I'm Mike Cerrone with Mastermind Agent. This month's top agent is Liz and Mike McKee with Coldwell Banker Preferred in Wilmington, Delaware. Last year, they closed 84 transactions with a total sales volume of $25 million. Their average sales price was $297,000, of which 40% were buyers and 60% were sellers. They operate a team with 9 members, 4 client care specialists, 1 settlement coordinator, 1 listing coordinator, 1 virtual assistant, and 2 team leaders. Liz and Mike McKee are the team leaders of the Liz and Mike McKee team. Liz has been an agent for 30 years and is a third-generation realtor. Mike has been an agent for 30 months. In this call, Liz and Mike talk about why Liz left her family brokerage to join a national franchise, how they doubled their sales volume and tripled their GCI in 1 year, their goal to double again this year and how they plan to do it, the difference between the sales side and the business side of your practice, what they do to get 48% of their business from repeats and referrals, how to use statistics to separate yourself from the competition, the expired listing campaign that generates 24% of their business, how they turn one listing into 2 clients, their successful neighborhood preview model, how old-fashioned basics result in high profit margins, the key to working with your spouse, plus team dynamics, compensation, profit margins, and more. Welcome to the call, Liz and Mike.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.
Looking forward to it, Mike.
Before we go into what you're doing now, let's go back for a minute and talk about what you did before you got into real estate. Mike, let's start with you.
Well, Mike, it's interesting. I was in the sales and sales management for a number of years, worked in the financial services business, and saw that business moving to computers back in the 1990s, and decided that I didn't want to be tied to a desk, and had a real cool opportunity with a company that some people might remember, ThermoSpas. They were in the hot tub business back when things were very good, and we sold in-home sales. We sold hot tubs where we went to people's homes and sold sight unseen out of a book. So I got a great experience of in-home sales that way. And then when the market turned down, we all remember the debacle of 2007 and 8, I actually started into my own business and tried that for a couple of years. And after a number of years of telling Lizzie that real estate wasn't for me, I was out of excuses and got into the business back in August of 2011. And all she keeps telling me is, what took you so long? And I really regret not getting into the business much, much sooner now.
Liz, what were you doing before real estate?
That's a good question. I had a couple different secretarial jobs when I got out of high school, and I'm actually a third-generation realtor now. It was my grandparents and my parents and then my sister and myself. But my father and I were very much alike in reference to our personalities, and I never thought that I could work for him. And when I got in the business, my mother was also an insurance broker with inside the real estate business. So I actually got into the office as an assistant for my mother in the insurance industry. And then when I saw what was involved in reference to real estate, I thought it looked very interesting and that that was something that I could do. So then I got my real estate license. And it's probably been about 30 years now that I have been licensed in Pennsylvania and then got my Delaware license, I believe, in 2007.
3 generations. That is going way back. Were all the conversations around the dinner table and the get-togethers about real estate, or was it pushed to the side?
No, it was always about real estate, Mike. And as a young child, I would always say to my parents, can't you guys talk about something else? And now I find Michael and I having those exact same conversations around our dinner table.
You must have been exposed to the real estate business really early. Did you go into the office as a teenager or even as a young child?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I have one of the favorite photos I have in our home is of me as a young child. And I'm guessing I was probably maybe 6 or 7, and I was sitting in my grandmother's chair. And next to the chair was a globe that my grandfather had. So I literally have that globe in our home, and you can see the globe in the photograph and me as a child. So I have very many fond memories of going into the office, of seeing my grandfather had already passed, but seeing my grandmother and visiting her at the office.
Well, Liz, when you took the plunge and got into real estate, do you think you had a fast start or a slow start?
I had a very interesting start because I came from a mom and pop mentality. So, you know, in the reference to the real estate world today, it's very, very different. It was basically, there's the door, go find your business. And, you know, back then it was very different. We didn't have computers. It was all done by, I can't believe how old I am, newspapers and the lovely blue MLS books. And you used to have to, do a lot differently than you certainly do today. And when I got into the business, being a little stubborn that I am, I did not use my maiden name because I wanted to prove that I could do it on my own, not use the family name. So I was a little stubborn in that respect. Very, very different.
Did you start with your father? Did you start with his company, or did you branch out on your own right away?
No, I started with my father's company, my grandfather's company, my father's company, and I was there for about, 23, 25 years.
Liz, you went to a large national franchise rather than the mom and pop that your grandfather and father ran. Why didn't you continue with the family business? Why did you move over to a large franchise?
That's a great question, Mike. And the main reason is it's very difficult to compete. When I saw the way the market was going, I would speak to the family members and say, we need to change. We cannot keep on going the way we're going. You know, the people that my grandparents sold to were no longer around. I mean, you know, we had a very niche market at that point. And we were losing business right and left. You can't keep agents when you're a small mom and pop. You just couldn't pay them enough, and there wasn't any training or education to even offer them. So I would try to discuss this with my family members and say, we need to change, we need to grow. And they didn't want to do it. They wanted to keep on going the way they were going, and I wanted to grow my business. And I couldn't do it there. The funds just weren't there, so it was time for me to move on. And Coldwell Banker was a perfect fit for me at the time because Michael wasn't licensed. And then even when Michael came on board, and what I find amazing, Mike, is, you know, you don't know what you don't know. You know, coming from a small mom and pop, until you see the technology and the IT and everything that is available, it was just like one of those, wow, why didn't I do this sooner, where my business would have been if I had.
When you made that transition, did you see a jump in your production?
Well, you know, I think when you change from any office, Mike, there's going to be, you know, a little lag time because you have to get the word out to all of your COI and have the conversation. So there was a little lag time, as I think as happens with most agents. So once people realized where I was and they could find me, it grew rather quickly, and the credibility was amazing. The fact that I had attached myself with Coldwell Banker, one of the oldest companies around, and then plus all of my experience, you know, when you've got the mom and pop training where my grandfather did a good 90% of his business with a handshake. And that does certainly bode well now with the corporate that I have behind me, where I had the small training and I continue that into the business that we still generate today.
How many homes did y'all sell last year?
Last year we sold 84 homes for right at $25 million.
If I have my numbers correct, basically you had doubled from the year prior, your volume and maybe even tripled your GCI. Does that sound correct?
It does, Mike.
Well, how did you make that big leap?
Well, I think the first thing is we really looked at the business from the listing standpoint. That one of the things that I've done is being from the sales industry, I found so much information in the real estate business that people were willing to share. And we had some very close friends Harry and Marie Greiser that are big agents in the Philadelphia area that were kind enough to give me the millionaire real estate book that Gary Keller had written. And I've always been a sponge for knowledge and really have jumped into the business and just torn it apart and studied the tapes, a lot of help from your tapes, and really enjoy studying businesses and how they work. And we looked at it first from a marketing standpoint, and I think that's one of the things that may help particularly new people coming into the business, is that so many people think we're in the real estate business when I really believe that we're in the marketing business first. We just happen to be in real estate selling homes. The one thing that I learned from the Millionaire book was that if you have the listings, you're an employer, not an employee. And our coach, Jim Cabasco, it was interesting because as I started into the business, I really didn't understand the real estate business, living with Lizzie as long as I had. We'd been married at the time for 10 years. And I really never understood the real estate business as a business. And one of the things that Jim said to me, Jim Cabasco, our coach, was somebody's always being born, somebody's always dying, somebody's always downsizing, and somebody's always upsizing. Life happens and real estate happens around it. And when I really understood that, or when we really understood that, because Lizzie was a consistent 20 to 30 unit producer year after year, and we looked at it and said, well, I really can't go after the COI with Lizzie being in the business at the time, 25 plus years. We really had to look at how can we start to market ourselves, market the business, and understand the business. So we really made it a listings-based business. And that's how we really have been able to grow the business over the last couple of years.
You're predicting more growth. What do you anticipate doing here in 2014?
Our drop-dead number for 2014 is 150 closed sides. Our goal is 165, $40 million in business.
Basically, you're looking to double again.
Yes, we are.
I think based on your track record over the last year, you have a good chance of doing it.
We really feel like that we do. We've been blessed with some great people that have come onto our team, and we've really tried to build it around a family concept of everybody together, everybody achieves more in a team. And we have some just tremendous, tremendous people that are sharing the same goals that we have. And it's really about growing the business and helping people get to where they want to be also.
Where is Wilmington, Delaware?
Wilmington, Delaware is just south of Philadelphia and north of Baltimore. So we're in a nice niche area, and we really cover three counties in particular. Delaware County, which is just outside of South Philadelphia, Chester County, which gets out into a little bit more rural area, and then we fall down into the Wilmington, Delaware area, which is Newcastle County. So we really have quite a radius that we're working. It's about an hour and a half radius from where our office is, and we have a couple of agents that are, maybe a lot of people don't look to build their business this way, but we've got, as I mentioned, a couple of key people that are in some strategic areas, and we're looking to build around them in those areas in the counties that I had mentioned.
Do you have one central office location, or are you creating some satellite offices or satellite people on your team?
Well, the nice thing is that Coldwell Banker Preferred has 9 offices, and we've literally worked out of 8 of those offices, Mike. The company allows us to utilize them, and the geographic location suits some of our agents a little bit better than where our desk is. So we're literally all utilizing the offices in the states that we're each licensed in.
You and Liz, are you both licensed in both Pennsylvania and Delaware?
Yes, we are both in Pennsylvania and Delaware.
Describe your current real estate market.
It really depends on the area, Mike. It's interesting because we were on a listing presentation the other evening where the inventory accumulation was at a 7-month accumulation, and we're going on one tonight where there's 2 months. So what you find is that each area is pretty much unto itself. We've definitely seen the market stabilize. In some areas, we've had some increase, but it's pretty much of a stable market. And the nice thing is that really we can go anywhere that we want to create business, duplicate business. And I think that's one thing that maybe for some new agents that might be on the call, that's good news. If you're in that suburban or even rural type area, there's so many different ways that you can create business. Or if you're a seasoned agent, get re-energized and restart your business again. So we feel that we're very fortunate to be in the demographics that we are. The average days on market in the three counties that we work in are, each one is a little bit different, but they're anywhere from 70 to 90 days. We've been fortunate last year. Our days on market were 47 days on market on average, and we're looking to obviously trend that down a little bit more also.
Why do you think you've been able to sell homes twice as fast as the average of your area?
Well, the one thing that we've done, Mike, is that we really have worked very hard on our print material. The old concept of perception is reality. First, when I got into the business, I went back and I asked Lizzie, you know, what's the percentage of the listings that you sold in your career? And we really dug in and we found out that she was 30% ahead of the industry average after 2008. So the first thing that we did is we put together a nice little flyer and said that we've been fortunate to be 30% ahead of the industry average and used that as our original marketing piece. And then we went a little bit further and put together some trifolds to give some credibility, not only to ourselves, but also to our agents. And then we went as far as putting together a pre-listing packet, or what we call a marketing proposal. And one of the things that we, if we're out talking to somebody, we've had a lot of success with door knocking and not doing what a lot of the traditional agents have done of working in the office through phone calls or emails. And we've went back to that old philosophy that Liz started with years ago, that you went out and had farm areas. And the one thing that I've always learned is you can tell a lot more by looking somebody in the eye and having a conversation with them. And one of the things that we try to do is have real estate conversations every day, but yet also have something that we can leave, a nice leave behind, that tells them a little bit about us and what we've done. And then the next step would be to get together and discuss your situation a little bit further.
Do you all have a niche or a specialization in your market?
We really, Mike, it's interesting because in getting ready for this, we looked and as we always do, source our business, and about 48% of our business last year came from past clients, sphere of influence, referrals. Withdrawn and expired were 24% of our business. We have something that we'll probably get into called a neighborhood preview, which was 5% of our business. Open house was 9% of our business. If you total that up, it comes to 86%. So we really have looked at many different areas because there's just so much out there. And I think that's one of the things that I mentioned earlier in understanding the business side of real estate as compared to just the sales side of it.
Mike, you've mentioned that a couple times, the business side of real estate rather than the sales side of real estate. What do you mean by that?
One of the things, Mike, I think that real estate has changed dramatically, as you probably know, in the last 10 years with the concept and the advent of the team. And I really looked at the business through Lizzie's eyes for many years, being that individual producer. And I didn't see myself going out and showing buyers or having open houses, which, by the way, now I do all the time and love. But I had that kind of perception that it was just an individual business. And looking at the team concept and now being in the business for next month will be my 31st month in the business. You said we're just about 2.5 years in. And to look at the power of the real estate business when you start to build a team and really understand that listing-based business where you can duplicate other business around it. It's fascinating to me that the number of business that comes from signs, from the internet presence, and really starting your business from that listing base of, if you have the listings, you're in control of the market. Maybe a good way to put it is you're an employer as opposed to an employee. And what we did, Mike, is we really looked, Liz and I, because one of the things, her background and knowledge of the real estate industry was far, far surpassed what I could ever be from the negotiating side and understanding the contracts. My more forte was in sales and sales management. And the old scenario that you can become an expert that in anything you're willing to put 10,000 hours into, we really took that to heart. We had an interesting thing happen on December 5th was my birthday of 2011. We wound up talking about the business because I had been licensed for a month at that time, had been out and started the process of door knocking and how we were going to develop other business outside of our COI. And I started to get a handle on just how much was out there. And I said to Liz, if we just put our head down for 2 years, I promise you, you won't believe where we will be. And that was just last September. And you've given an idea of some of the numbers. So I've said to many people, I've never seen something so explosive. If you really work as a system, and that's what we've done on our listings, is Liz really does all the preparation for presenting the numbers, and I do the marketing side of it. And it's so much fun to be able to go into presentations with your best friend, your spouse, and have a business together and know exactly what your roles are. And people have said to us all along is, how do you do it? How do you work together? But I think that the thing is that we both have our defined roles in the business. It's not like we're together every day, but I can tell you the one thing that we do enjoy doing is going on listing presentations together. And I think that was the key to it, is really when you understand just how much business, one of the things that we always try to do is have at least one to two other transactions around each one of the listings. And that's what I mean by understanding the business, and then also getting additional agents into the business and training them is really the fun thing and watching them grow. So that's kind of the idea of building a business as opposed to just an individual producer.
Two key words that I heard you mention and building this business rather than just the sell side, and that is duplicatable and systems. Sounds to me like you have a good grasp on that. You also mentioned this idea that the two of you working together as a married couple, and you know, many people are looking at this and wondering how they could pull that off. But you mentioned you have roles and each of you plays a role in the business. My first glance at your roles is that, Mike, you're running the office side, the administrative side, the operations side, and Liz, you're running the sales side. Am I correct in that view of the way your business is structured?
No, you have it backwards.
I have it backwards.
I'm in the office, the administrative, you know, having the knowledge on the agreements of sale, the processing of everything and negotiating. So I handle all the administrative with the assistants, getting the contracts. The assistants will do the listing contracts, they'll do the agreement of sales, but I oversee that aspect. Michael is more the marketing, where he determines, you know, the material. He handles more of the systems in reference to the scripts, you know, what to say, how we say it, and how to improve and to make that where we can teach our team members the exact same information so it can be repeated over and over again and be consistent.
You mentioned you go on listing appointments together. Are you all taking the listings, or have you started to transfer that to the team members where they're working with both the sellers and the buyers?
Well, of course, whatever listings we generate, we do keep ourselves. The majority of the buyers that we do generate from that, we will turn over to our team members. But we do allow our team members to take listings also. We know some teams will not allow their agents to do that. Our agents can list and sell. And whatever listings that they get, they are their own. And we just train them on how to go after them, how to go after the listings, and then even train them in reference to the scripts and the presentation once they do get the opportunity to get inside a home.
I want to come back to your roles and how you split them up. I'm still formulating this picture in my mind. So Liz, you're working on the administrative side and the negotiations and contracts. Mike is working on the marketing systems and scripts. Who's handling payroll and business planning and so forth. Do you guys do that together? Or I'm still trying to get this idea of how you've structured it so you don't step on each other's toes.
Payroll I handle. Usually pretty much anything office administrative. Michael handles the numbers in reference to tracking, in reference to our spending and what we're putting out to generate business. But I handle the payroll, more the
administrative. Lizzie more handles the business aspect. I more handle from lead generation. We were exploring new lead generation opportunities through the internet. But as far as the marketing side, generating the leads and majority of getting into the house, I do, other than Lizzie's old center of influence. More of the marketing and lead generation is more on my plate. And then the numbers aspect of the business is also where I handle. And as Lizzie said, more of the sales and administration she oversees.
Who oversees the sales agents, the agents on the team?
I do. I spend a lot of time in that area. And we just started something recently, Mike, where Lizzie has joined into the team meetings on that also. When we first started out, it was just myself working with the agents. And it's brought a whole new aspect to our team meetings with Liz being in there and sharing. So we're kind of doing that as a dual role now, which I know that's an area that a lot of people probably wouldn't do, but we work so well together that it's been a tremendous asset.
It usually works out too, Mike. As Michael says, he handles more the administrating and the training of the agents on how to grow their business. But when they have a question when it comes to the agreement of sale or the negotiating, they come to me.
Right. All that experience being in the trenches negotiating those contracts for the last 30 years, that's why I had anticipated that Liz would be on that sales side. So this is really interesting to me.
It's funny because one of our agents said, she goes, I've got the best of both worlds. She goes, she got Michael who has all the marketing knowledge, and then she has me that were my years of experience with the agreements and how to handle situations.
Do you two have any recommendations for someone who's thinking about working with their spouse? What are the do's and the don'ts to make that work?
You definitely have to set boundaries. And you certainly have to have, and Michael will say this to me all the time, communication. Because I traditionally will shut down. I keep everything internalized, where Michael is very very good at verbalizing and communicating. So you do need to communicate and definitely define your roles as to who's going to do what.
I think the other thing that may help, Mike, is, as I said earlier, I think that so many people get into the real estate business and don't realize just how important it prospecting is. So and I think that's where many times realtors, if they do it with their spouse, that's many times where, let's say, tension can come. And if you have somebody that is going to be the marketer and the lead generator, be that. And I think that's one of the things that's really led to our success is I enjoy that aspect. I don't enjoy the paperwork, the negotiating, any of that. And we make it very clear with our clients that we do have two separate roles. And we'll do that right at the listing presentation, early on in the presentation. We'll make that clear that I'm the marketing arm and getting your home out there and exposed, and that Lizzie's pretty much everything else along with our team, that we feel that we hold our team, whether that be the administrative end, any subcontractors with relationships that we've had, because, and we didn't get into it earlier, Mike, we also had some time where we were back when real estate was hot, and in the early 2000s, we were flipping properties, so we've had a lot of knowledge of homes and relationships with contractors and that type of thing. But one of the things that's helped us now, obviously, in the sales side of the business is those relationships have continued on. And one of the things that we always say is we hold our team to a higher standard. And our business is to exceed your expectations. And we hope that you're so impressed with what we do that you'll refer one or two people that you really care about while the transaction's going on. Because we know if we do a bad job, you'll probably tell 20 or 30 people. And we can't afford that.
I really like this idea that you
came to an agreement on who was going to fill what role. Did you do that formally in a business plan, or was it just that you were talking back and forth? And if you did it formally, did you formalize it with any kind of titles for what your position would be in the team?
I made him sign a paper that I'm always right, and I had it notarized.
Probably framed. More importantly, Mike, we had the best contract that you could ever have called marriage. And that's really what we've based our business on, that if we did enter into this business together, that it would never come before our marriage relationship. And that if ever got to that point, that we needed to have a take some time, step back from it, and realize, one, why we got into the business. And that was is that we enjoy being with each other. For those people that are out there, there's nothing better than getting up every day and next to your best friend and then having an opportunity to chase your dreams. So that was the thing that we based everything on. We've never had anything formal or anything like that. We feel that our relationship is strong enough and we love being with each other, and real estate has just enhanced that opportunity to spend more time together and, as I said, chase our dreams and goals and help other people get to where they want to be.
How lucky am I, Mike?
It sounds like it's working out well.
I have an amazing husband.
I've heard you mention that you're best friends multiple times. I think that's probably some of the glue in there that keeps it all together.
It does. I mean, and I don't want to insinuate that every day is perfect, but I think that the biggest thing is that, as Liz said earlier, that if you ever feel like that if you do it together, that you will always communicate and have questions, I think is the best thing that, and get back to the basics of why you're doing this.
Are your personalities the same or different? Have you taken, for instance, the DISC personality test?
We have, and Lizzie's the consummate driver, and I'm the classic amiable. But the one thing that I will tell you, Mike, is that we've spent an awful lot of time studying personality types. And it's one of the things that I would say that has definitely helped our business. As I said, I'm a tape junkie, a book junkie, and love to learn about people and challenging the different personality styles. I'll never forget from one of your earlier tapes you were interviewing. I don't remember who it was, but you're questioning the person, and you were going through a client situation where the person said, "I can't see this person ever buying," was the conversation we're having with the agent that was being interviewed. And they said, if you can't ever see them buying, certainly they can't. And words are so powerful, and obviously studying personality types, body language, tonality, all the things that many, many people before us have given us, there's so much good information out there that we all have. If we really want to succeed in the business, there's so much good stuff out there that you can learn. And that's one of the things that I think that's been a tribute to Lizzie, because she's been in the business, and this might be good for some agents. So many people have been in the business for a long time, and one of the hardest things I think for all of us to do is to change or to look at ourselves. And one of the things when we got in, I said, how do you do a listing presentation? And Liz would say, well, I just go in and do it. And I said, that's not what I've learned in sales, that everything has to be documented and why you do things. And one of the things that was interesting was, as her business was 95% referral for years. And as I mentioned earlier, I came into it, so I knew we couldn't go after that. So we had to really raise our game up going into people that we didn't know. So we felt like that we had to be scripted and on task to exactly what value proposition each of us were going to have so that we could communicate better with people and make them feel comfortable that we were the people that could get their home sold.
Well, let's get into that marketing side, how you're generating your leads and your business. Half of your business came from your COI, your sphere of influence, and your past clients. Let's talk about that. First of all, how big is your database of past clients and sphere of influence?
Great question, Mike. We got up last year to about 1,500. When I came into the business 2.5 years ago, Liz had a client base of right at about 750. So in about 2 years, we were able to double that. And then we looked at it last year, and we cut back a little bit. I know that's always an interesting question that you bring out many times is, do you leave people in? Do you take people out? And when I originally got in, I felt like, wow, let's market to everybody. But now as our business has grown, we've really looked at it and said, what do we need to do to really enhance and take it to the next level? And one of the things that we felt like is that we needed to get a good form of communication. And we really have looked for about 2 years to find what we thought was a good, valuable newsletter. Because one of the things that you hear so many times is after you've sold somebody, they don't want to hear about your statistics. They want to have something that's pertinent to them or what's going on in the economy. And we found what we feel is probably one of the better newsletters in the industry, very, very cost effective with a very high open rate. And we're finding that that's been a big asset. We're starting to see more past clients calling us since we started that and really starting to get some real good traction with that.
What's the company that's producing that newsletter?
It's homeactions.net. If anybody would like to utilize it, it's about home ownership, products that have been recalled, what we feel is very good, pertinent information to keep us at top of mind, but not just inundate with real estate statistics. Homeactions.net.
You said open rate. So is this going out by email or hard mail?
It's going out by email. It's going out every other week. So we're having literally 26 touches throughout the year, and we're finding a very, very good open rate on it.
When you say really good open rate, what's the open rate?
We've been right at about 40% on it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you expanded this list that you have from 750 to 1,500 in 2 years, added 750 people. What was the difference? Where did you find those people? Who were you adding to your list?
Another great question, Mike. One of the things that we've been able to do is really duplicate a lot of business around our listings. And this might be something that's great for a seasoned agent that wants to get their business back, re-energized again, or for a brand new agent. Many people have reduced their time of open houses or aren't even doing them. And we really look at open houses in a completely different vein in that when we're on a listing presentation, we'll ask the potential seller, how do you feel about your neighborhood? And I think it's pretty fair to say that any seller is going to say, it's a great neighborhood. We say, well, how do you feel about the open house concept? Well, I don't know. How do you, and they'll put it back on us many times. And we'll say, we have a different philosophy in that we want to utilize the neighborhood as an asset. Because our job as your listing agent is to expose your home to as many potential buyers as possible. And we start with the traditional just listed calls of 200 around the neighborhood. But what we've done after that is we've added it with a phone campaign where we'll follow up and ask the neighbors, who do they know that might be interested in moving into the neighborhood? Who do they work with? Who do the kids go to school with? Who do they worship with? And we've had success where people will give us people's names from that. But more importantly than that, we feel that the first open house is the most important. And what we do is we coordinate not only the day that we hit the market, but also right when we hit the market, we'd like to have that first open house from 12 o'clock to 4 o'clock, where most people in the industry are reducing open houses. We're actually increasing our open houses because we found that generally people want to work those less. We see tremendous opportunities in the Friday or Saturday prior to the open house, literally going out and following up the just listed cards and the phone calls with what we call a neighborhood preview, where we invite them to that neighborhood preview from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock. And what we found is that, one, we get quite a few listing opportunities from it, because people say, oh, I've never had anybody come to my door and talk to me about real estate. But more importantly, we also are having them literally working for us, talking to buyers. We had one recently where a fella sent out to his work of 400 people an email saying, I'd like you to come to this open house, or at least come to my neighborhood because I love my neighborhood so much, I'd like somebody to move into it. Free advertising. And we found that we're getting people going to the traditional 1 to 3 open houses because we're open an hour earlier. We're getting that buzz in the neighborhood of, wow, these guys really market our home as opposed to list our home. And we are then getting relationships because we've met these people. Now they're potentially coming to the neighborhood preview or to the open house and have even brought people. And when we sell it, then we can go back with just listed calls or door knock again and say, hey, just wanted to see you again. Just wanted to let you know we sold 123 Main Street in a week or 2 weeks or whatever it may be. Please keep us in mind. And, oh, by the way, would you like to be kept abreast if we haven't captured their name or their email? This now gives us another opportunity to capture their name and start to drip market to them. So we feel that with that added time frame of not only the time period, and with inventory being at a 7-year low in our area, we're seeing tremendous amount of buyers coming through our open houses. We've been able to capture a lot of buyers, and also move-up buyers, we're having listing opportunities. And the other thing that we've done at the open house is had our trifolds. We've gone out and made specifically buyer trifolds and given people an idea of what they want to do if in their early part of buying. We've also put together a seller trifold and give some data as to if somebody's listed, if they're thinking about listing their property in the near future. And then we always carry with us our marketing brochures. And we found from the open houses that it just has given us, when you combine our open houses and our neighborhood preview, this year we think it's going to be a good 20 to 25% of our business is going to come as a result just of those two facets of our business. And when you talk about that on a $40 million business, you can do the numbers and you can see that if you're an old agent, you want to re-energize the business, or you're a new agent, my gosh, what a great opportunity for somebody. If they're just willing to do the things that realtors used to do years ago, go door to door and farm areas and knock and make phone calls, and not just make phone calls and emails, but get out and meet people and tell them who you are and what your value proposition is.
The neighborhood preview, it sounds like it's an open house just for the people in the neighborhood. Does that occur before your public open house?
We originally started that we were doing it from 12 to 1 prior to the open house. But we rethought it last year to the end of the year, and we said, why wouldn't we publish in the multiple listing that we're open from 12 to 4 and let anybody come? We don't care if they come from 12 to 1, the old neighborhood preview, or 12 to 4. We're just trying to expose the home to as many potential buyers as possible, and then also work those buyers and see if they're move-up buyers or anybody in the neighborhood that potentially down the line would like to list and sell their home. We want to become the experts in that neighborhood by doing things that maybe nobody else has done in that area before. We feel it gives us a better shot to be able to do that.
So your neighborhood preview is at the same time as the open house. Basically, you've tried to combine two events into one.
That's correct. We're combining the two into one now. We originally had it where it was just from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock, and then we've had the traditional 1 to 4. But we've combined it all together now just to get as much exposure as we potentially can.
Do the neighbors, the people that live in the neighborhood that are going to the neighborhood preview, do they still feel some type of exclusivity, that they're special, that they have some kind of entry into that home before the public? Or I'm trying to see how that works, that you've been able to keep the specialness or the uniqueness for them. Why not just call it an open house? Why are you adding the neighborhood preview term? Is that simply for the marketing to drive people in the neighborhood into the open house?
Yes, it is, Mike. It's to get them into the open house and be able to have, as we all know, this business is about having real estate conversations. And we feel that whatever way we can have a real estate conversation, we're exposing that property, and we're also building future business through having those conversations.
When you had it spread out where you had this 1 hour before your public open house for the neighborhood preview, were you getting a lot of the people from the neighborhood to show up?
Yes. And it's interesting because the more that we seem to be in a neighborhood, the more traction we seem to be getting from the neighbors. One attending it, hey, it's good to see you again, and hey, I'm back to see because I'd like to get ideas. No problem. Come on in, see the property. That way you have a better idea of what market conditions are. And we've just found that from every aspect, it's a positive response from the neighborhood, and that they're seeing also that we're doing things that other realtors aren't doing.
So you've expanded the time of the open house to a 4-hour window. You've combined it with the neighborhood preview. You sound very confident about the program. It's been working. It generated almost 15% of your business last year, and you're expecting 20% this year. How many people are coming through the open houses?
We had one last Sunday. We had 3 open houses. We had 24. And how many, Lizzie, were from the neighborhood? There was a number from the neighborhood, wasn't there?
There was 5 or 6.
5 or 6 from the neighborhood. We had another one where we had 12 through. Now, that one, they didn't want a neighborhood preview. And then we had another one that we had done the neighborhood preview, and we had, I believe it was in the 12 area, and 5 or 6 were from the neighborhood on that one.
And on those 3 open houses that you had, what were the results? How many buyers or sellers did you pick up?
We wound up, Lizzie, how many were you? You did the one where there was 24.
The 24, you know, we are finding, Mike, that a lot of them already do have buyer's agents. So probably out of the 24 that came through, I would say 5 of them did not. And then we turned those leads and that information over to one of our team members to follow through.
So about 20% of the people that came through did not have an agent, and you've put them into your lead system.
Correct.
Exactly. The one that I was at, Mike, I wound up picking up a potential listing appointment and 2 buyers through that also.
And that was one where 12 people came through?
Correct.
Was that the one that they did or did not have the neighborhood preview?
That's the one that they did.
And the one listing lead you picked up, was that from the neighborhood?
That one was not. That was somebody that had found the open house through the internet.
So about 25% of the people that came through, you were able to pick up as a lead and a potential client. So it sounds like it is working for you. Are you doing these every weekend?
We are, Mike. We've got a big listing load right now. We feel that the more open houses that we can do, the better opportunity it's going to be for us on both sides, picking up, as you mentioned, buyers and listings off of it. A lot of people have shied away from it recently, and we feel that, again, we've gone to a longer time period and they have seen tremendous, tremendous results. Now, do we wind up selling that property, the open house, through the open house? We all know that that's not the highest generation of selling homes. But the thing that we're finding is by doing that additional work around it and with the phone calls and the door knocking, that's where we're getting some additional traction that may help some people.
Let's go into those details on your promotional side. You mentioned calling 200 of the neighbors around that listing. Did I get that part correct? Was it 200?
Yes, sir.
Are you making those calls one by one, or using some kind of automated system to send those calls out?
We're using Mojo.
Okay, so you're making the phone calls through Mojo.
Yes, sir.
And then are you also sending out any type of direct mail?
We're doing a just listed card, which is the first contact. The second contact then will be the Mojo call. And then the third contact would be the door knock for the neighborhood preview. And then you can even go steps beyond that. After the property is sold, you can go with a dissold card, which you can then follow up again with Mojo, and then again from an additional door knock.
The just listed card, is it going out to the same 200?
Yes.
And then the door knocking, are you also knocking on 200 doors?
Yes.
So you really are coming at those people over, a couple-week period, maybe even a 10-day period. You're contacting them three times.
Yeah, we've taken a very organic approach there because, as I said earlier, we feel that each listing should generate at least one to two additional pieces of business. And we've been very, very fortunate to have that happening around it. It was one of the things you asked earlier about how we've been able to grow our business so quickly and why we feel that we can continue on this growth pattern that we're on is listings are the name of the business, as we all know.
You're working a very large geographic area. I think it's an hour and a half drive in any direction. Although these techniques, they almost sound like farming, geographic farming techniques. Are you doing these only in specific neighborhoods where they'll accumulate a lot of goodwill, or are you doing it all over your market area?
We're doing it where we've had listings. And then the other thing that we also have done with our agents is they've picked five subdivisions that they want to be the neighborhood expert in. And we will do additional door knocking in those areas, just listed, just sold, or make a flyer up of here's what's sold in the neighborhood in the last 3 months or 6 months, and do you know anybody that's interested in buying or selling real estate? So what we feel is the market is, it's unlimited. And it's one of the things that I think is probably the hardest thing for maybe people starting out, or again, even somebody that wants to re-energize their business. There's opportunities everywhere. It's interesting because I had an opportunity a number of years ago before I was in the real estate business. I was in the financial business years ago, and I had an opportunity to spend a day with Tom Hopkins. And this was back in the late 80s. And I knew who he was and obviously his success in the real estate industry. And I'll never forget one of the things that he said to me, Mike. He said, if I didn't knock 100 doors a day, I wasn't comfortable. And I took that to heart when I came into the business because, as I said, I wasn't going to go to our center of influence. Lizzie at the time had been in the business for 25 years. I wasn't going to have credibility. So I thought that, you know, we didn't want to spend a lot of money at that time. Why not put together something and get out and meet people and do it the old-fashioned way? Because I think so many people spend so much time in the office today, and I've even had trainers that told me when I started out that that wouldn't work. You couldn't hit enough people. Well, one of those things, if you tell me you can't, that's even going to give a little more tenacity to us to why to do it. And it's turned out that I've had, and this is the true 70-year-old ladies, I've knocked doors and they've said, come on in, let me show you the house. I'm amazed at how friendly people are. And it's even happened with our new agents when we go out for the neighborhood preview. I've taken some of the ladies on our team out and they say, well, anybody open the door? I mean, this is the 2000s. People don't knock on doors anymore. But it's amazing. If you just go do the things you're uncomfortable with, the death of fear is certain, and the amount of business that's there, I'll never forget the first couple of weeks of going out and door knocking. I would call Liz every night after picking a neighborhood and saying, babe, it's unbelievable. I got 12 more names for the database. I got 16 more names. And I said, this is going to be unbelievable.
Tommy Hopkins, that's amazing. He, of course, got his start in real estate in his band uniform, if I recall. He has a great story there. That's very fortunate. How were you able to spend the day with him? How did that come together?
It was in a prior business that I was in. He was in town doing a seminar for us, and he was actually spending the day. And at the time, I was playing a lot of golf, and he had his golf clubs with him. So we wound up, picked him up at after the seminar, and we went out, played golf, and I wound up driving him to the airport that day. So we had about 8 hours together, And I was very involved in a sales management company at the time. So it was just a day of being able to fire questions at one of the best.
That's awesome.
It is, Mike. And I do have to say I've been very, very fortunate to have some just tremendous, tremendous mentors in the business. And as I said earlier, I think one of the great things about the real estate business is that so many people are willing to share. And what you've done with your summits and these calls is invaluable for people that really want to move their business forward and take it to the next level. And my hat's off to you, because it is just the wealth of information that I've had being really a rookie in the real estate business. I can't thank you enough for what you've done. And people like Gary Keller and Tom Hopkins and Haas Pratt, and just the people that are willing to share, it's a tremendous, tremendous community.
How many of these 1,500 people that are in your database are past clients?
Lizzie, that's a good question.
Well, I can answer that question because we did some numbers for that. Lizzie has 750 settlements, just over 750 settlements she's had in her career. Not all of those would be in our database, but I would say that a good 450 to 500 would be in there.
I think that'd be about right.
Now, you all mentioned that you've removed some people from the database recently. How did you make that decision? Who did you take out?
Those were some of the early door knocks that I had that hadn't been opening emails, hadn't had any response to us. We also do obviously Christmas cards or holiday card, and just felt like that they were maybe in some areas geographically that we didn't want to be in. And now that we've got some real traction in the business, we've decided to really clean that database up a little bit, because early on, I was just so excited that we had a name and a number that we could market to that we put them in there. And now that the business has a little more traction, I think we've, like I say, thinned it out a little bit.
How are you staying in front of these folks in your database? What are you doing? Are you doing phone calls, emails, snail mail? What exactly are you doing and how often?
Yes, yes, and yes. So, Lizzie, you want to talk about what you're doing with the sphere of influence?
Yeah, I just recently updated all of my sphere of influence and, you know, scrubbed it and came up with people that, you know, I know are still in the area that I would want to follow up with. And I'm just emailing, phone calling, touching them, and then try to touch them at least 4 times a year. But they're also receiving the newsletter, and then it's my personal phone call, just, hey, how you doing? What's going on? How can we help you? You know, the normal situation from there, or sending emails, depending on how people like to be contacted, and or even texting.
Are you trying to contact those people in a certain frequency, Liz?
Yes, I do. I try to reach out to them once every 3 months at least, and then depending on the conversation, you know, if something's going on in their life, like if I know if someone's not well in the family, or someone's graduating, or if there's a family event, I will touch base with them after the family event, or touch base, you know, depending on if there's a health issue, to see how a family member is doing, you know, just as any friend would.
When you say reach out, you mean you're going to make a phone call?
Yes. I'm old school.
How are you tracking that? Do you have a software system that you're tracking what your prior conversation was about?
Well, here's me old school again. I have it on paper. I have a system. I have a system set up. So I log every time I spoke to them, I log what I spoke to them about. And then depending on when I want to touch base with them, I will take that piece of paper and put it to a month and date, like a tickler system, I guess, for lack of a better word.
So you're keeping some file folders in your cabinet next to you, and they're marked by the month, I'm assuming. And then you're just moving those pieces of paper with their contact to the next folder for that month that you want to call them?
Correct.
Does each contact just have one sheet of paper, or do some of them have they accumulated into multiple sheets?
Yes. Some of them are pretty darn fat.
Yeah, a little ragged on the edges, sure.
Yes, very torn.
But you're doing it in your file cabinet as opposed to in a 3-ring binder.
I have a combination. And my binder is more current. The filer is for further out because of the size.
And so that system has been working for you. Why have you resisted moving to the digital age, so to speak, and put it in the software?
Because things crash and they can't be retrieved. things get deleted accidentally. So I feel if I can touch it, I can find it.
And it's working.
Yes, it is.
Do you think that it will continue to work as you grow the number of leads that you're working with?
My binder, or I'm going to convert over to a computer.
I'm just imagining your desk growing and your file cabinet getting huge and trying to track all these people and these dates.
Well, you have to realize mine is, you know, really majority of the past clients. You know, and so some of it is the new is coming in, but usually the new business is more in the computer. And their touch is different than the old past client base that I have.
This is the end of part one. The interview continues on part two.